Welcome to Southern Maryland Perspectives. My name is Dr. Brad Gottfried, and I'm the president of the College of Southern Maryland. As you know, this is a talk show that features timely topics and guests from around the region, and today we're going to talk about an organization that does great things for all of us in rural Maryland, but many people don't know about it, and that is the Rural Maryland Council. And with us today is the chair of the council, and Charlie Ross. Good morning, Charlie. How are you?
Good morning, Doctor. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you. Thanks so much for being on the show.
My pleasure.
I always start off, Charlie, with an easy one, and that is, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I was born in rural Maryland, in far western Maryland, as we call it, Mountain Maryland, in Garrett County, about 25 feet from the east bank of the Occoquan River in my grandfather's house. And I've enjoyed rural Maryland all my life. Lived around the state, though, in Montgomery County, Baltimore City, Anne Arundel County, and seen a lot of it. And it's been my pleasure to come back and give a little public service to the Rural Maryland Council, which has been very dear to my heart since it was created in 1993.
And as they say, there's no place like home.
That's right.
Well, let's assume, Charlie, we get into an elevator, and you have a little bit, a snapshot to tell me, Charlie, What is the major purpose of the Rural Maryland Council?
Its major purpose is to serve the diverse interests of the 18 rural counties of Maryland, and usually on trying to create public policy solutions to problems that they share. And I guess I could best describe it as being an attempt to create a one voice for rural Maryland, because, you know, since the reforms that have led to the decline in representation in our legislature in particular, it's hard to have the political will and to enforce that on behalf of all these counties, even though they represent, obviously, the majority of the landmass of our wonderful state.
Now, what year did it actually begin?
1993 was when it was created. And it began about 12 years ago, about 2 years later. It was originally established as the Forum for Rural Maryland, and then a few years later became the Rural Maryland Council.
So basically, if I understand you correctly, Charlie, it was a way to get the rural community, the rural counties together to combat the Baltimore cities, the Baltimore County, the Montgomery counties that had maybe more political clout?
Well, to kind of level the playing field, let's say, and to deal collaboratively with all those areas as well. We think it is a win-win situation if we can find public policy solutions, even in the rural areas of Maryland, that can be applied in the suburban and urban areas. So this year, the second year of my term as chairman, having achieved a little bit of success last year, I've kind of committed myself to getting out there and engaging in just the kind of dialogue that you and I are engaging in.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I was peeking at your website is, now you mentioned, 17 Maryland counties are part of it?
18.
18, okay. And in southern Maryland, how many of the counties are actually part of that 18?
All three.
Okay.
All three southern Maryland counties.
Now, what's interesting is on your website, it talks about federal designations that that they differ. There's a fewer number of counties considered rural.
That's correct, because they have certain other guidelines that end up eliminating, let's see, about half of those counties. I mean, for instance, some of them are quite logical in terms of demographics because of growth, like Carroll County, Frederick County, Harford County. Of course, Culver County itself has experienced terrific growth, as well as Charles County, and neither of those are on the federal list.
Right. Yes. Interesting. And so the only one left actually considered by the feds would be St. Mary's County then?
Correct.
Okay. Now, this council is doing so many things, and we could spend a lot of time just talking about some of the initiatives. But let's talk about maybe some past initiatives that you're really proud of, where the Rural Maryland Council has really had an impact on the quality of life of all of us in rural Maryland.
There are at least two, Doctor, that really come to mind. The first, of course, is something we call MIRDAF. Now, I don't like acronyms, so I'll just say it one time. Mm-hmm. It's the Maryland Agricultural Education and Rural Development Assistance Fund. And what that has meant to organizations in rural Maryland is that since 2001, we've distributed nearly $2 million to 43 different rural-serving organizations in the form of grants. Mm-hmm. And that, in turn, has leveraged about six times as much overall in terms of money spent on rural initiatives. And Southern Maryland has benefited from that.
Now, can you, I don't want to put you on the spot, Charlie, but can you think of any organizations off the top of your head from Southern Maryland that have received a grant in the past?
Absolutely. One that you are very close to, and that's the College of Southern Maryland.
Okay, and that wasn't a planned question.
I thought I might surprise you with that.
Yeah,
one.
Really? You did? That's great.
Yes, we did about a $45,000 grant to them for some programs there, and then mm-hmm. also the Southern Maryland RC&D, which is Resource Conservation and Development Council, and the Tri-County Council for mm-hmm. Southern Maryland.
Mm-hmm. I see. And so now where does the funding come from for this grant program?
That particular funding is in our budget from the state of Maryland. We also end up leveraging some other funds for another program serving rural families, but that comes from a foundation source, the Annie E. Casey Foundation, and that's to improve the quality of life for rural families, their well-being.
Now, that's interesting because I'm familiar with the Annie Casey Foundation, and I always thought it was more for the urban areas. I know one of their big initiatives is poverty elimination.
That's correct.
So they're actually working in the rural areas as well then?
Well, we've had a couple advocates within the foundation that have been very strong on that, saying, why is it we make a distinction between urban and rural? Mm-hmm. Shouldn't we be serving both? And so in the last 2 years approximately, and we made great strides in that regard. And one of the direct beneficiaries of those grant monies has been the local management board at St. Mary's County, Inc.
Okay, and with these, ultimately, does it mean direct grants to families in poverty or services for them? How does that usually work?
Usually it's to provide the means by which they can take control of their lives. A lot of the kinds of things they've done. For instance, I don't know about that particular program, but I did have a testimonial from Garrett County, actually, where the program there, through Community Action, pointed out that 15 families learned their credit scores and identified steps to take to repair their credit ratings. 16 families learned to prepare a household budget, and 13 families opened and deposited money into a savings account. So those are the kinds of things mm-hmm. that these programs promote.
It's interesting you mentioned because, you know, for many of us it seems so common sense, and yet for many people in poverty, it's anything but.
That's exactly right. You know, as far as a rural community goes, you would think there's lots of common sense that tells you these are the steps to take in order to get out of poverty, but many neglect some of the baby steps before attaining some sort of sustainability.
Now, is this going to be an ongoing program, or will the grant eventually run out from the Casey Foundation?
Well, Casey has given us every indication that they're going to fund it for another 3 years at least. Mm-hmm. And we've been very supportive, doing lots of work with community-based organizations, the Tri-County Councils throughout Maryland. There are five of those representing 15 of our counties in rural areas, plus the community action agencies. And organizations, frankly, like my own, I'm on the other side of it. I'm a president and CEO of the Garrett County Chamber of Commerce, and it's always in the best interest of businesses to get involved, in my opinion, in programs like this.
Sure. Okay, so you said one of the big successes has been, these grant programs. You said there was a second one?
Well, we had actually... There's two, actually, one of which is a spinoff. Our former executive director of the Rural Maryland Council, Steve McHenry, now heads the Maryland Agricultural and Resource-Based Industry Development Corporation, otherwise known as MARBITCO, mm-hmm. and it's mostly loan programs. The third one is the Rural Prosperity Initiative. That's a Rural Maryland Prosperity Investment Fund that has been established by legislation as of last year, but has not been funded yet by the Maryland legislature. So we're working very hard to make that program come alive because it's got some very laudable goals.
So now these organizations, do they operate separately? Do they have a separate board, or are they somehow under your umbrella?
MarBidCo itself does have a separate board, but we do operate hand in glove with them. Obviously, Steve's having been head of the Rural Maryland Council staff helps, and we've actually shared resources, staff resources, in the past. So they're really not separated that much, although in terms of accountability, they do have that separate board.
Now, your executive director of the Rural Maryland Council is someone from Southern Maryland. I guess he still lives in Southern Maryland, and that's David Jenkins.
That's correct, and I'm very proud of that. When I said about the achievements last year, my first year as chairman of the council, I was proud to have led the effort to get David to join us as the chief of staff. That was that, along with tying us more closely with the Rural Health Association people, were my two goals for last year, and our board did achieve both of those.
Now, where are you actually located? Where's your offices?
We're in the Maryland Department of Agriculture building right there in Annapolis, off of Truman Parkway.
I see. Okay, so we've talked about some of the successes of the past, and I was looking at the website. There's so many things going on, but let's talk about, first of all, the broadband initiative.
Yes.
And what's going on there and why that's important to people like all of us in rural Maryland.
Well, it's a very strange coupling, Doctor. It's we have a lot of interest in Congress, particularly in the Senate, for making sure that under Homeland Security and under the Defense Department, our particular installations are linked with direct access broadband capability. So, for instance, the Lower Eastern Shore, there's a Wallops Island facility, and we're looking to hook that up to Pax River. So that means some infrastructure that we can fund with federal money that will extend that line. Hopefully, by the year 2009, we'll have it into Southern Maryland and also into Mountain Maryland as well, to in order to link together high-speed interconnections.
Now, once you get to the Pax River base, will you expand out into Southern Maryland, or will it stop right there at the base?
No, it'll go all throughout Southern Maryland.
Oh, okay.
As a matter of fact, we just had a meeting a couple days ago where we approved an approach to the U.S. Senate in getting about $40 million in order to complete the entire system. But the phase two of that would be the infrastructure that goes into Southern Maryland.
Now, you know, assuming funding and everything else, what would be the timeline of completion for that project?
Well, we are ambitious to get it completed by 2012 at the outside. But if we were fortunate enough to get the entire $40 million into appropriation, we could complete it conceivably by the end of 2009.
Now, for a typical Maryland resident, let's say in Southern Maryland, how is it going to change my life in any particular way?
I've seen, experienced in my own area in Mountain Maryland, the kinds of advantages that DSL connections might give us, or satellite internet access, and this would exponentially increase our access to the internet, to markets for global marketing purposes, to information sources that we don't have that high speed would afford us, and put us on in a parity with anybody in a suburban or urban environment that's fortunate enough to have much more competitive advantages right now.
Interesting. Now, I'm not going to mention any names, but you know, you mentioned dial-up, you mentioned DSL, and usually you go through a commercial vendor, you know, for a monthly fee. How will this work when it runs down into Southern Maryland? Will the typical homeowner be able to access it?
There'll be initially it'll be institutional in its nature, going to the colleges, local government, the libraries, and that sort of thing. But there is leased access. There'll be a development where current providers may in fact want to lease portions of the high speed, then turn around and sell it to the general public. And that's how that would probably work in most of these areas, because otherwise you'd have a competitive disadvantage for commercial providers.
Mm-hmm. I see. So that's exciting. And I know that another big initiative of the council, and by the way, I should mention to the listeners who may have tuned in a little bit late, I'm with Charlie Ross, who is the chairman, actually this is his second year as chairperson, of the Rural Maryland Council, talking about an organization that really does have a large impact on all of us living in Southern Maryland or these 18 rural counties of Maryland, and so many of us, myself included, don't really know that much about it, so I'm really pleased that Charlie's here with us. Charlie, another initiative I know that you're working on is the healthcare workforce.
Yes. This is run by second vice president is directing efforts. Her name is Bonnie Braun, and Dr. Braun is the associate professor and a family policy specialist with the University of Maryland Department of Family Services in their school, Public Health. And Bonnie has put this together, and they just completed a listening session in each of the regions of Maryland as to what healthcare consumers need that is different from what you might think of in suburban or urban Maryland.
What would be some examples of that, Charlie?
Well, getting doctors, physicians, particularly pediatricians, obstetricians, gynecologists, to locate in rural areas is not an easy thing to do because you don't have the high fee structures that would provide them with a very nice living in a suburban or urban environment in the rural areas. So we're looking at innovations like identifying young people in high school and then following them all the way through from expression of their interest in medicine all the way through medical school or nursing school or specialty school, and then have them come back to the areas of their upbringing in order to deliver those kinds of services.
And when you say follow them, Charlie, would that be follow them in terms of maybe some compensation or paying for some of their educational expenses?
Well, we're talking about as much as underwriting the entire cost of their higher education.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, it seems like, what was it, maybe 2 weeks ago, big report about rural Maryland and the concern. You know, we've heard so much about nurses and not having enough nurses, but, you know, we hadn't heard a lot about physicians, and the report's very clear that rural Maryland is going to have some problems with physicians, lack of physicians, and I think the worst area of the state was indeed Southern Maryland.
Dr. Gottfried, you're right. You're right on. That was done by MedCHI, the Doctors Association, and the Maryland Hospital Association, and it was very pointed. And hopefully, that's going to give us a roadmap to addressing just that kind of need.
It's interesting. Just this morning, I was in Charles County talking to one of the few obstetricians. And, you know, it really is scary knowing how few practicing physicians there are in some of these specialty areas. And I'm just happy that you and you know, your organization is working on this. Hopefully you'll be successful for all of our sakes.
Well, we wish that anybody who hears this kind of program will call us up and invite us out to listen to what they have to say and to share you know, some of our small successes that we have had.
Now, one of the issues that, you know, I don't know if it's being addressed is the whole issue of capacity. You know, it's one thing to have enough physicians that are being trained and they just don't choose to go to the rural areas, but it seems like it's something else where there's just not enough physicians being trained. And I wonder, are there any initiatives to increase capacity of, you know, physicians and healthcare professionals in our schools and universities?
I think some of those issues are being addressed at the Maryland State Department of Education so that the high schools will make it part of their priority. There are also intervention programs being discussed at the medical schools. You know, obviously, Maryland is blessed with superb medical schools, but at the same time, you're absolutely right that the capacity building potential has not been exploited to the fullest.
Mm-hmm. Now, another initiative is something that we're hearing more and more about, especially being on the Chesapeake, and it's the water and sewage systems and concern about that. What's the initiative with the Rural Maryland Council in these areas, Charlie?
Well, we are working very closely and have been for the last 2 years with people that were promoting Green Fund and then the $50 million appropriation that the governor was awarded in a special session to start the initiatives with the Chesapeake Bay. We are part of, at least in the talking stages, we are part of the beneficiaries of those funds. In other words, there will be money in the Chesapeake Bay 2010 fund for the Rural Maryland Prosperity Investment Fund. That's already there with legislation in place, and there's a bill that was recently introduced that we'll be working with the governor's people and the Chesapeake Bay Foundation on exploiting just that opportunity.
Now, how's it going to work, this fund? Is it going to go to individual homeowners for upgrades in terms of their septic systems, or what's the plan?
Well, I haven't received all of the details, but in fact, they're going to redistribute the funds through grants to various entities and to the Chesapeake Bay Non-Point Source Fund, which anytime you get into non-point source pollution, you're usually talking about the farming industry, so you're talking about individual farmers.
Okay. Now, are you optimistic? Do you think there's enough money in the fund to really make a dent in the problem?
I've followed this thing for years, you know, 25 years as a political consultant lobbying on lots of issues. I've seen a great deal of money come through Congress as well as through the state legislature. A lot of what the Chesapeake Bay Improvement needs is individual community support. I had the pleasure of serving as a head of a homeowners association for about 400 condominiums and townhomes on the Chesapeake Bay in the Annapolis area, and I know that things like oyster seeding in marinas and then planting the oysters on bars just off offshore, that kind of individual effort needs to be undertaken at the grassroots level, because no amount of money overall is going to save the Chesapeake Bay unless you have that kind of community support.
Yes. Now, I've just mentioned about three initiatives. Are there any others that you really have an interest in that the you know, the Rural Maryland Council is involved with at this point?
Well, I mentioned that legislation had passed setting up the Rural Maryland Prosperity Investment Fund. I just did want to mention that object of that fund is to raise the rural living standards by the year 2020 by concentrating monies on rural regional planning and development, regional infrastructure projects, rural entrepreneurship development, and rural community development, as well as our current grant program, which I mentioned before, which is MIRDAF. And so what we're hoping is to get that program funded, because the legislation exists to get it running. It's just that there hasn't been allocation appropriations made by the legislature yet.
Now, what would you say the biggest problem, if I could put you on the spot, of for communities in rural Maryland, what is the biggest challenge that they're facing?
I think it is having the political wherewithal to make what they think should happen happen. You know, that's why if we speak with one voice in rural Maryland, we can establish parity with all the other political forces out there. I'm a very practical person when it comes to, you know, realizing visions, and the only way to do it is to make sure that you have the political wherewithal, the political will to make it happen.
So the various counties, these 18 counties, they play nice together then?
We'd like them to play nicer together. But that's why I'm going out and trying to meet them all. I've spent all my life in Maryland, and I've lived, as I said, around the state and visited every county in Maryland, but I'd like to do it this time. During this year, and so if there's a chance, an opportunity to address people, particularly through mediums like your own, I'm looking forward to it and hope that people will contact us.
Now, one of the things I noticed is that you provide annual awards, big awards. In fact, I saw a photograph. The award looked bigger than the person. Yeah, it took like three people to hold it up. Now, who do you?
Those are our Rural Impact Awards, and they are significant, and we love recognizing particularly economic and community development from our rural counties. And those are some of the honors that as we go around the state, we'd like to highlight, because there are resources in Southern Maryland that I'm not even aware of, except through an annual summit with its awards program. I want to see it firsthand.
Sure. Well, you touched on the Rural Summit. Let's talk about that. What is that all about, Charlie?
Well, we assemble, Doctor, every 2 years now it is, to share our programmatic successes and to plot the future. And that's how Rural Prosperity Investment Fund was born. It came out of a rural summit. It's a collaborative time. It's a time where we hear from legislators, policy leaders in every policy subject area. Annie Casey Foundation is one of our partners in all that, the Broadband Coalition, another partner. And it gives us a chance to direct ourselves as a group, pinpointing some goals that we can achieve in the succeeding 2 years.
I see. Now, does that summit move around, or is it always in a certain area?
It moves around.
Okay.
Last few years, it's been in Mountain Maryland. It's been up in Cecil County. It's been down in Solomon's Island.
Hmm. In fact, was it in Solomon's recently?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the last one was in Solomon's.
Okay, yeah, okay. In fact, I came to the one of the receptions there.
Ah.
I wanted to ask you about what is it that is not quite on the horizon, well, maybe on the horizon, where the Rural Maryland Council hasn't begun any work on it, but do you see any issues that will occupy the council's time in the future that have some impact to us who live in rural Maryland?
Absolutely. I think that as part, and it's not necessarily even part of the Prosperity Investment Fund program, but infrastructure is all important. You know, we have a county in Garrett County of 30,000 people. Yet at the same time, we're developing infrastructure all the way from a world one of its kind in the world adventure sports centers with recirculating man-made whitewater course in the midst of our three natural whitewater rivers.
Mm-hmm.
We've put money into expanding from one visitor center to four visitor centers. We're looking at an exhibit hall, a performing arts center. We've had expansion of our hospital with $9.5 million, and our ski slope with another $9.5 million. Those kinds of infrastructure things don't happen by accident.
Mm-hmm.
And we, as a tourism entity, because it is our major industry, are spending right now more than almost $450,000 over the period of 2 years with seven different grant programs in order to give tourism infrastructure what it needs.
Now, have there been any initiatives in the past that you've been successful to the point where you say, okay, we're out of that business, the problem's been solved, we can put this one to bed?
I don't think that any one of them ever goes away
mm-hmm.
for good.
Mm-hmm.
But part of what we've done, I think, is to raise the awareness of constant need in the area of education. As a Chamber of Commerce, we have 22 programs in our schools, our public schools, the college, and what have you, where we try to reach out to young people and identify for the future. And having established those, I think now we can move on to expanding into other areas.
Mm, I see. Well, you've got a wonderful website that represents a wonderful organization. Charlie, do you remember offhand the web address of the website?
Very tricky question.
Yes, yeah. Oh, good.
It's www.rural.state.md.us. And that'll take you to the Rural Maryland Council. And if you don't mind, Dr. Guthrie, mm-hmm. I'd also like to give my email address. So if anyone does want to engage in a dialogue or have a presentation about the Rural Maryland Council, they can contact me directly if that's all right.
Yes, please.
It's Charlie, Charlie, at Garrett Chamber, one word, and Garrett's with two R's and two T's, .com. Charlie
Excellent.
At GarrettChamber.com.
That's great. Well, believe it or not, a half hour has come and gone, and we're at the end of our program, and I really want to thank you for being a guest on the show today.
Dr. Godfrey, thank you very much, and it'd be nice to come down and see Southern Maryland again. I'm looking forward to it.
Definitely. Well, hopefully that'll be soon. I'm with Charlie Ross, who is the chair of the Rural Maryland Council, And I'd like to also thank you, the listeners, for tuning in today. And I hope you join me next week for another edition of Southern Maryland Perspectives. Until that time, I'm Dr. Brad Gottfried, president of the College of Southern Maryland.